As we jump in, we're going to start a new series here this week, and over the next 4 weeks, we're going to be kind of doing a flyover the first half of the book of Exodus. And so if you have your Bibles, you're going to want to turn to Exodus chapter 5. We're going to be looking at chapters 5 and 6 today as we dive into this. I don't know at what length you've considered and discussed your freedom, but I know I've pondered it a lot. We're in a nation that kind of prides ourselves in our freedoms, right? I mean, we are so proud of everything that we have and that we claim to have in this way. We love our national freedoms as Americans. We're grateful for our religious freedom, emboldened by our powerful right to protect ourselves and to bear arms. We are zealous in our outcries of our freedoms to speak and to express ourselves. We're quick to communicate our right to silence. The Bill of Rights is not in question today. But when I look at America today, I think our freedom is in question. I think our freedom is of sorts. Question, because although we are free, all of us find ourselves stuck in a slavery of sorts. And the slavery is not like our national freedoms. Our freedoms are national and they're public, but our slavery seems to be spiritual and private. Something that we keep in and that we're not willing to express like we are our national freedoms. And the greatest tragedy on this subject is this: for most of us, it is in fact our freedom that led us to this enslaving dungeon that we find ourselves in today. We are at liberty to do whatever we've done that makes us now live with the shame of what we've done. We have the freedom to choose what we chose so that now we bear the consequence of the choice and or the fear, because we've gained so much. The fear to lose what we have would be too painful to bear, and so we worry and we fear. Our freedom to borrow too much money has left some in financial desperation. Our freedoms to consume what we choose to consume, or to love whom we choose to love, or to indulge in that which we choose to indulge, or to follow whom we choose to follow. Freedom is great up to the point of slavery. You tracking with me? Peter reminds us of this truth when he encourages readers with these words. He says, in 1 Peter 2:16, live as free men, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as servants of God. And yet, don't we live in a world where we've used our freedoms, our liberties, to cover up our evils? With all of our freedoms as Americans, we're not too different from the Israelites when they were enslaved by the pharaohs of Egypt after Joseph had been forgotten. And although the Israelite slavery was literal and physical, our spiritual slavery is like theirs in this. Like the Israelites in Egypt, it is difficult to escape our slavery. And the reason that so many of us are bound is not because the doors to freedom have not been opened, but because we haven't figured the way to the open door. We're stuck lying in our beds, not willing to move. And so let's look at what it was that even made it difficult for the Israelites to escape their slavery, and maybe that'll help us as we journey out of our own. Today we'll recognize three reasons why it's difficult to escape slavery, and hopefully this reason will put you to the point that'll make you want to get out once and for all. And so the first reason it's difficult to escape slavery is simply this: we are stuck in slavery's rut. Haven't we all been here? I don't know if you've heard how they control elephants when they get big, but an elephant is one of the biggest mammals that we have, right? I mean, I think the whale is the only thing bigger as far as the land mammals go. I mean, the elephant's huge. And is what we do is when we get an elephant that's young, we tie the elephant, typically just by a leg, to a stake. And the elephant in its youth is not able to move this stake out of the ground. They pull at the rope a few times and they realize, I'm stuck here. And as what happens is this elephant grows, and it grows to such great size, But a long time ago, when we started tying that leg to that stake, the elephant in a defeated mindset said, I can't move that stake. And so now big, and even though it would take very little effort to pull that stake out of the ground, that elephant is still bound and enslaved, thinking that it cannot get out. Routines are hard to break, aren't they? Routines are difficult to break, especially when those routines have broken us. Let me say that again. Routines are hard to break, especially when those routines have broken us. See, like the elephant, our will to overcome the stake has been broken. We've grown, but our willpower has not grown with it. Consider this text in Genesis 15, verse 13. The Lord said to Abram, remember Abram, he became Abraham. Remember, he was told to leave his family to go with his wife who had no children to go to a distant country. God was going to show it to them, and even though they would never own it in his lifetime, they were going to get to see what would eventually become the promised land. And in this sight, God would tell them, this land is going to be yours, and then it's going to be taken, and it's going to come. You're going to come back, and it's going to be yours, like all yours. But this is the words, the Lord said to Abram, know this for certain, your offspring will be resident aliens for 400 years in a land that does not belong to them and will be enslaved and oppressed. And so for Abraham, this is like no big deal, right? Because he's not going to live to see it. You're talking about 400 years from now, God? All right, whatever. Whatever that means. But guess what happens? His grandchild, his great-grandchild, is sold into slavery in Egypt by his great-grandchild's siblings. And now they become enslaved after a time when Joseph is forgotten for 400 years. And when we pick up in our story today, these 400 years are now complete. But let's think about this. The Israelites have fulfilled this prophecy that God spoke to Abraham. They've been enslaved 400 years. That's a long time. Let me help us. The United States of America is not even 400 years old yet. Are we there? We're in a baby nation, okay? This is a big period of time that we're talking about. In fact, the Israelites who we pick up reading about, they've never known freedom. And their parents didn't even know freedom. Their grandparents and probably their great-grandparents were those being enslaved in the first place. This is a big deal. A lot's gone on here. And so we pick up in our text, and actually I'm going to cheat. I told you to turn to chapter 5. We're going to look back into chapter 4 and verse 29. Are you there with me? Exodus chapter 4. Let's start picking up in verse 29. Let's pick up the story. We're just going to read a little bit. We'll read through the first chapter, or the first verse of chapter 5, and then I'll jump a few verses. In chapter 4, verse 29, this is what we read in Exodus. Then Moses and Aaron, they went and assembled all the elders of the Israelites. Aaron repeated everything that the Lord had said to Moses and performed the signs before the people. And so, give you a little backstory. God has told Moses and his brother Aaron to go to the people of Israel to tell them, hey, we're setting you free. You've been enslaved all your lives. God's hearing your cry. It's all right. Help's on the way. First responders, here we are. Okay. Verse 31. The people believed, and when they heard that the Lord had paid attention to them and that he had seen them in their or had seen their misery, they knelt low and they worshiped. Later, Moses and Aaron went in and said to Pharaoh, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says, let my people go so that they may hold a festival for me in the wilderness. Let's jump down to verses 4 and 5. The king of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why are you causing the people to neglect their work? Get to your labor. Pharaoh also said, look, the people of the land are so numerous, and you would stop them from their labor? Think about this. As all the Israelites had known was work. They didn't even know what it was to worship. This idea of worship was kind of new because they weren't permitted to worship corporately or publicly. Surely some of them in their homes were still keeping the traditions that were passed down to them by word of mouth as they were enslaved year after year. But the worship that they experienced in chapter 4, verse 31, was already over. We believe God's heard our pain. He's seen our stuff. And then all of a sudden, we make the request of the king, and he says, get back to work. Okay. And sometimes that's what the routine of slavery has done to us, hasn't it? We like this idea of worshiping God. We like this idea of getting out, and then we get the call to work. And so, like slaves, we get right back to our daily routine. My question for us is, what is our excuse? For most of us, slavery has lasted so long that we don't know how to get out. God has seen your misery, and He cares. He's heard your cry, and we believe Him. We want to worship Him, but we get right back to work in the rut of our slavery, and we're financially spent. We are relationally fragmented. We're cemented in our sin. We can't get out. We're frozen by fear. We're hamstrung by our hopelessness, and we're bound by our addiction, so we sit where we are, enslaved. So I want to give us an action step. If that's you, if I've communicated you and me in that statement, then this is what we need to do. You need to communicate a desire to be free. Are you with me? Because see, the Israelites, they were crying out to God, but they weren't crying out to one another. They weren't rallying around this cry. And for us, if we want different in our lives, we've got to communicate this. We've got to find somebody or somebodies that we can tell. I want to tell you to tell your spouse if you've got one. Tell a friend, a trusted friend. Tell a family member. You can tell me. Tell somebody who cares about you deeply. We are stuck and we want out. We need to admit it by telling somebody poised to help us. I wish I could say that this is all we need to do. So let's continue and look at what the Israelites did. And once we admit that we're stuck in the rut, and that's this desire to get out, we also need to know another reason it's difficult to escape slavery, and that's this. It's difficult because we've lost our will to fight. Within that routine of life, our willpower is broken. We're not going to pull at the stake because we stand defeated. The battle hasn't even started. The only thing free about freedom is the result, friends. You ever think about that? You can lose a lot of sleep thinking about freedom. I think it should be called something like costly dumb, but that would just be dumb. So we call it freedom. But freedom's expensive. Freedom is very expensive. We either buy it or we bleed for it. And I don't think many of us have thought about freedom that way. We think we just vote for it now. That's not what freedom is. We buy it or we bleed for it. And that's what's been done for us when it comes to our spiritual slavery. We're humbled by the troops who've given ultimate sacrifices of dying while fighting for our temporary freedoms. Others are free as American citizens because they've paid their life savings to travel here and to work through the heavy process of citizenship herein. Some people even despise Christianity on account of freedom's cost. If there is something free, it is Christianity. Something where we don't pay the price has been paid for us. We're the ones that don't have to bleed one blood on our behalf. And so in some cases, we live in this earn it world, and so we get it as Americans. Our ancestors earned it for us so we don't have to. Somebody down our line paid the bill so that we don't have to. Somebody down our line bled so that we don't have to. but we still claim the heritage that we have, and we still point to our line as having bought or bled for our freedom. And yet we find ourselves in this place where we really have not brought anything to the table when it comes to freedom, either nationally or spiritually, for that matter. It seems unfair. We want Christianity to cost us more. The cost of freedom is something that sometimes causes us to shy away from achieving freedom in the first place. In other words, it's easier to stay in the rut of slavery than to begin this fight. Let's pick up the story in verse 6. So we've heard the Pharaoh of Egypt saying, all right, get back to work. And in verse 6 through 10, this is what we read. That day Pharaoh commanded the overseers of the people, as well as their foremen, don't continue to supply the people with the straw for making bricks as before. They must go and gather straw for themselves, but require the same quota of bricks from them as they were making before. Do not reduce it, for they are slackers. That's why they're crying out, let us go and sacrifice to our God. Impose heavier work on the men, then they will be occupied with it and not pay attention to deceptive words. So the overseers and foremen of the people went out and said to them, this is what Pharaoh says, I'm not giving you straw. And you can imagine how that went down. So we jump to verse 15. So the Israelite foremen went in and they cried to for help to Pharaoh. Why are you treating your servants this way? No straw has been given to your servants, yet they say to us, make bricks. Look, your servants are being beaten, but it's your own people who are at fault. But he said, you're slackers. Slackers, that's why you're saying, let us go sacrifice to the Lord. Now get to work. No straw will be given to you, but you must produce the same quantity of bricks. The Israelite foreman saw that they were in trouble when they were told, you cannot reduce your daily quota of bricks. When they left Pharaoh, they confronted Moses and Aaron, who stood waiting to meet them. May the Lord take note of you and judge, they said to them, because you have made us reek to Pharaoh and his officials, putting a sword in their hand to kill us. Wow. Like the Israelites, we're defeated before the fight begins. That's big text right there. Slavery to sin is already taken the fight out of us. It's no wonder people live off the system, right? We get into financial desperation. To them, it seems easier than clawing our way out because it's hard to get out when that's all that we make. And so, as much as systemic racism is real in our world, so is systemic economical disparity. I mean, we make it so that it is difficult for people to change their class. In America today. To the addict, the withdrawals are much more painful than the headaches in our empty existence as we chase the next high. To the adulteress, the reconciliation with our spouse is much more difficult than divorce, so we take the easy road. We want freedom so long as it doesn't cost us anything, and that's what we've made of our freedom. Another avenue, another way to cheapen grace, another way to cheapen life, and we continue to just hit the bag. But freedom is expensive. So expensive that it often adds to the challenge of getting out of our slavery. So this is our action step. Here's our second action step, and that's this. Decide that freedom's worth fighting for and prepare for your first battle. If you want to act, if this is where you are and you're saying, you know what, I know that I'm enslaved, whatever it is, whatever foothold Satan has in my life, whatever it is that makes me so filled with shame and regret and whatever it is or fearful, whatever it is that's not going to allow us to move forward in a relationship with God or maybe even a relationship with somebody else, and we need to hand this thing over, we need to decide that freedom is worth fighting for. It's something that needs to cost us. We need to buy it or bleed for it, and it needs to cost us. And we need to prepare for that first battle. What does that battle look like? It's going to be different for all of us. It might be a conversation with somebody that we've hurt or that we've been hurt by to begin the reconciliation process. It might be a plan to overcome that addiction, signing up for the class. It might simply be the creation of a budget so that we can get out of debt. Friends, our slavery and our battles are as different as the sins they represent, but the lesson is the same for everyone in this room. Your freedom is worth fighting for. And some of you, you walked into this room defeated. You walked into this room thinking you don't matter and that your situation doesn't matter. You're insignificant. And I want to tell you that there is proof. There is great proof that you matter. And I can't die for you. I can't do anything for you other than to lead you up to the feet of the one that says you matter. You are worth fighting for. And you need to esteem yourself at the same level that he esteemed you. And I'm sorry that I got to sound mean to say that, but that's as loving as I can get, because some of you need a little bit of a wake-up call to say that you're worth something, because this world tells you you're not. And they're the liars, not you, not the voices in your head that keep you in the routine where you are. You are worth fighting for. Choose your first battle and get in the fight. Otherwise, we're already defeated. Let's look at the third reason it's difficult to escape slavery, and that's simply this: we ignore freedom's call. For some of us, we will never escape slavery because we ignore freedom's call. When I was in youth ministry, the students often complained about their parents hovering over them. If you're a parent of adolescents and your kids say something to that effect, it's okay. This is what I want to tell you, what I told kids. I would most often reply with something to the tune of, it's pretty special to have somebody care enough about you to want to make you good, want you to make good choices. It's all right. You need people speaking on your behalf, right? That are going to say the same things that matter to you, because that's what it is. If you didn't care about your kids, you're not going to have hard conversations with them. If you don't care about your kids, you're going to just set them free to the devices of this world that we know are going to enslave them. And because we care about the freedom of our children, the eternal freedoms especially, we're going to speak up to them and for them and go on their behalf. We relate. When we grow up and remove ourselves from accountability and support of our parents, the voices are more like whispers. Somebody asks us if we're okay and we decide to lie and say yes. A family member or a close friend or a coworker recognizes a change or a problem and they call us out on it, and instead of engaging their help, we find ourselves ignoring it because it's easier to stay where we are and do what we've always done. And friends, when we're enslaved to sin, when we're enslaved to our emotional bondage like the Israelites, we often get so stuck that we cease to listen to the voices that are trying to help us out of the mess that we're in. Notice how that played out for the Israelites. We'll pick up in verse 22. Just read a couple verses, 22 and 23. So Moses went back to the Lord, and he asked, Lord, why have you caused trouble for this people? And why did you ever send me? Ever since I went into Pharaoh and to speak in your name, he's caused trouble for this people, and you haven't rescued your people at all. Into chapter 6, but the Lord replied to Moses, now you will see what I will do to Pharaoh. Because of a strong hand, he will let them go. And because of a strong hand, he will drive them from his land. Then God spoke to Moses, telling him, I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as God Almighty, but I was not known to them by my name, the Lord. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land they lived in as aliens. Furthermore, I have heard the groanings of the Israelites whom the Egyptians are forcing to work as slaves, and I have remembered my covenant. The 400 years are over. It's hard today, but it needs to be a little hard today. Otherwise, we'll want to stay enslaved forever. That's a Holcomb addition. Okay? That's the point that's being made. Let's jump down to verse 9. Moses told this to the Israelites, but they did not listen to him because of their broken spirit and hard labor. That's a verse worth highlighting, isn't it? Moses told this to the Israelites, but they did not listen to him because of their broken spirits and hard labor. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, go and tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the Israelites go from this land. But Moses said in the Lord's presence, if the Israelites will not listen to me, then how will Pharaoh listen to me, since I am such a poor speaker? And if we know the whole story, we know that Moses never wanted to do this in the first place because he's complaining about his inability to speak well. Did you catch that at the end? Moses threw himself a pity party, didn't he? And so even their leader, who's supposed to usher in this charge, is already done. He ceased to hear the voice of the one who's already told him, don't worry, Moses, I'm going to be with you. He says, God, who are you going to send? Who's going to go take care of us? Because if you don't go, I don't want to go. I am with you. And now God reminded him that it wasn't about Moses. And sometimes that's the reminder we need. It's not always about us. It's about God wanting to be in relationship with us and us to follow him. But Moses, he did care about the people when he went to them, but they ignored him. They stopped listening to the voice because their spirits were broken because of the hard labor. We know the result that happens next. God uses 10 plagues for what I think is a dual purpose. One, it was to get the attention of the Pharaoh of Egypt that he was not, in fact, the God that he thought he was. Because the Egyptians worshipped the Pharaoh as though he were God. And he was also getting the attention of the Israelites because most of these plagues that happened to in Egypt did not happen to the Israelites. Some of them happened in both camps, but a lot of them only happened to the Egyptians. He was letting them know, look, if you follow me, if you trust me, if you go with me, I am here to help. I will set you free, but you've got to learn to trust. That's where our freedom action step 3 is simply this. Pay attention to the people trying to help you out. There are people that want to help us. Pay attention to them. Let them in. Let them help. Now, I'll add this caveat. Not everybody that wants to help is going to help, right? So let the people that are healthy in the area that you struggle in help. If somebody can't manage their own budget, don't tell them about your financial problems, okay? Find somebody that gets it. They're going to be the people that can offer real help. If you're struggling with an addiction, don't lean on somebody that's struggling with the same addiction. They're probably not going to help you out, and you're going to find yourself spiraling each other right back down into the hole of despair and depression and routine that makes us ashamed to begin with. Also, continue calling out to those in need of our help. And I hate that I even have to say this, but make sure we don't do that in judgment. We're not there to judge them. There's only one judge, and that's not our role. Our role is to love people and to get them to the grace and the truth that's going to change their eternities. And that's not the Refuge Christian Church. That's not Jeremiah Holcomb. That is Jesus Christ and him crucified. Do this in gentleness and love because you care about them. I'm going to close with a story from Jimmy Dodd. And I've got a book in my... forgot to grab that. Let me say this. Freedom is available. Am I going to squeal this sucker? We'll see the range on this thing today. I brought this book, and this is a good story, so I wanted to read it from a book I just finished a couple weeks ago, The Thriving Pastor. I get to hear how this sounds back here now. This is, y'all in the back row should scoot up. It sounds better. It's free. You want me to just read from back here today? I'm good with that. I knew I had it in here. Dear God, help me find my book. All right, at one time this week, I had my book in my bag because I put it all in there. That's funny. Here's the short end of it. Buchenwald, name of a town in Germany. The second largest town through the Holocaust as far as number of casualties. Jimmy Dodd, he lives here in Kansas City. He founded an organization, a not-for-profit, non-denominational organization called Pastor Serve, where they just try to minister to ministers because they realize that this is a weird work where we do a lot of serving of others and feel like we can't tell other people about all of our struggles and challenges and realities. And so he created a nonprofit, and then he writes books out of that. And he wrote a book on the thriving pastor, the six relationships they need, but he's talking about freedom in his last chapter. And he gets to this point where he's talking about his chance to go to Germany with his family, and he takes his wife to Buchenwald so they get to be there and see this camp. On most of the gates of all of the concentration camps during the Holocaust, most of them had statements of your labor will set you free. Your work will set you free. What a big lie, especially because most of these gates were built by enslaved laborers, right? Your work will set you free. And then Buchenwald is like the only one that had a different quote, and I can't remember what the quote was. But another lie about freedom. But this is what happened. News reached Buchenwald about 2 hours before the American troops showed up on it. And so all of the Nazis left the camp. And there were like 30,000 men and boys in barrack after barrack with bunks four high, just laying in their beds. And these American troops, they walked in and they said, "Hey guys, we're here. You're free. The Nazis are gone. You're free." And for an hour and a half, they laid there in their beds. They would not move. A chaplain who was able to speak Yiddish, the common language of the Jews, heard of this issue and called for a jeep, and as fast as he could get to Buchenwald, went to Buchenwald, where he was able to go into the first barrack and communicate, "You're free." And for people to understand the call in their language, and the rustlings and the rumblings through that first barrack began to grow, and those who were able to move and walk, they began to get up, and they began to move from barrack to barrack. Some of them now excited to share the good news the first time in their lives. I can't remember his name. Eric Wiley, maybe one of the Nobel Peace Prize winners in 86, who was able to share about the Holocaust, was one of the survivors from this camp. But these men and boys who began to be invigorated by the hope that they thought was lost, as all they thought was, okay, here's this new set of army and this new set of oppression that we're still enslaved by, and they haven't told us to get up and work, and so we don't understand them yet, so we're just going to lie where we are. And friends, I want to tell you, as Christians, I see this all the time. We're laying four barracks high. We believe him, but we ignore the call. We don't want to move. We're stuck. We don't think we're worth fighting for. We don't know how to take that next step. And so in the midst of our slavery, in the midst of our despair, when we're enslaved by sin, we feel like there's nobody to help us out. And if there is anybody who feels that way in this room, as I pray and as we sing in this next song coming up, and I'll invite the worship team to come up, I urge you to look at the cross for a moment. I pray that you wouldn't see a decoration on the stage, but a saving God who with his last breath fought for you, for freedom, when he said his last words, "It is finished." We buy it or we bleed for it, right? Except for in this battle. We can't buy this. We can't bleed for this because that fight's already been made. The doors are already open, and it doesn't matter, not in this say, our work is not what's going to set us free, friends. Not in this case, Christ alone sets us free. We need a relationship with Him. Our bottom line is simply this today. We are enslaved and we don't know the road, but this is up to us. We need to choose freedom. And I'm not talking about our national freedoms. We are a blessed nation, and yet within our national freedoms, there are people who are so enslaved, who are so depressed, who are so afraid, who are so addicted, who are so consumed, who are so broken. And we have every means in this nation to not be where we are, and yet here we lie in our bunks while the voice of freedom is calling out. Friends, communicate your desire to be free. Decide to fight, for you are worth fighting for. And listen to those reaching out, even to you, for help. The ones who will point you to freedom in Christ, and those who we can point to freedom in Christ. Let's choose freedom. God, we are humbled by your gift for us. That though we live in a world where we can come and assemble freely, even in public places like a school, we admit, God, that for many of us, we've still chosen a life of slavery. We still wake up every day afraid and ashamed of things that are outside of our control, and for some of us, things that are very much in our control that we just can't seem to let go of on our own. And so, God, give us the help that we need. Help us to communicate to people, and those that we communicate with, God, would you give them listening ears and hearts of grace? They're going to point us to you. God, I pray that we can hear your voice with clarity, that we can understand what this freedom in you means. And God, as we journey with the Israelites over the next few weeks, continuing to learn about how our spiritual journey parallels with their physical journey, help us to understand freedom in new light so that we can live as free men and women, excited about our relationship with you and excited to live without the shame and the bondage and the routines that entrapped us and the shame that held us, because we are yours. We're no longer slaves. God, we're free children of you. In Jesus we pray. Amen. If you'll stand.